from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I just have to... this is perhaps the humblest day of my life. I know I sound like Rupert Murdoch, but and I mean to sound like him because I'm not sincere about it either. But it was humbling a couple days ago. All the Twitter and email and other kinds of response to me and my partners about the so-called Nigel Tufnel Day, 11-11-11. And great outpouring of whatever that was with regard to that movie. But it's, you know, it's a little, it sets you back a little bit. It makes you think, makes you reevaluate everything you believe in when you say, because we, you know, kind of was like hijacking somebody else's holiday. You know, you say to somebody, how are you going to celebrate Veterans Day? Oh, I'm going to see a showing of Spinal Tap. So, you know, it won't happen again for another 100 years. So maybe I'll have a less humble response to it by then. But speaking of veterans, you know, Veterans Day, the mitigating feeling for me is they got two a year, right? Because Memorial, kind of the same. Similar, you know, it's related. Anyway, on the subject of supporting the troops, because we do support the troops, right? That's very important to all of us, especially the military. The Washington Post reports that the Dover Air Force Base mortuary for years disposed of portions of troops' remains by cremating them and then dumping the ashes in a Virginia landfill, a practice that officials have since abandoned in favor of burial at sea. Imagine if we'd gotten Osama bin Laden earlier, he could have been dumped in a landfill. The mortuary in Delaware, the main point of entry for the nation's war dead and the target of federal investigations of alleged mishandling of remains, engaged in the practice from 2003 to 2008. The Bush years, they supported the troops. The manner of disposal was not disclosed to relatives of fallen service members, because that would make them feel something. The military mortuary that receives America's war dead and prepares them for burial lost portions of human remains twice in 2009, prompting the Air Force to discipline three senior officials for gross mismanagement. Ooh, it is. They're right. Air Force officials acknowledged the practice this week in response to inquiries from the Washington Post. They said the procedure was limited to fragments or portions of body parts that were unable to be identified. I think it was the identifiers that were unable. Just guessing. Or were later recovered from the battlefield and which family members had said could be disposed of by the military. The Air Force's Deputy Chief for Personnel said that body parts were cremated, then incinerated, then taken to a landfill by a military contractor. He likened the procedure to the disposal of medical waste. So support your medical waste, too, while you're at it. On a related subject, supporting the troops, at least 100 active members of the U.S. military had their homes illegally foreclosed upon by the Bank of America, according to the Justice Department. While Americans... The Justice Department announced that Bank of America's home loan servicing subsidiary is going to have to pay $20 million to about 160 service members as part of a settlement agreement. The foreclosures settled this week came between 2006 and 2009, the Bush years. Bank of America agreed to provide information about the foreclosures from the last 2 years, the Obama years, and will pay damages in the same minimum amount to those service members whose homes were illegally foreclosed during that time period. The review of the foreclosures is ongoing, so there may be more. Because we support our troops. And there's good news, ladies and gentlemen. We shared on this broadcast. What do you got, a frog in your pocket? I shared with you on this broadcast a couple weeks ago a proposed Freedom of Information Act rule from the Department of Justice would allow agencies to tell requesters of certain law enforcement or national security records that the information didn't exist, even if it did. Teach your children to lie like the government do. Well, The measure riled open government advocates and some members of Congress, the transparency mob. Now the Department of Justice says it's withdrawn the measure from its final regulations. One of several members of Congress who protested, Senator Charles Grassley, got a letter from Assistant Attorney General Ronald Welch saying the Justice Department decided that misleading the American people would be wrong. Oh, no, this was Senator Grassley's statement, and made the right decision to pull the proposed regulation. So, because we cared. Not really. Because somebody else cared. The government won't lie about that to us right now until we stop looking. It's the good news. Hello, welcome to the show. The third agency I want to destroy is...
I think I did it again. I made you believe. We're more than just friends. It might seem like a crush, but that doesn't mean that I'm serious. But to lose all my senses, it's just so typically me. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, I did it again. I play with your heart, got lost in the game. Oops, I did it again. I play with your heart, got lost in the game. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, you think I'm in love. Dancing from above, I'm not that innocent.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the Le Show World Headquarters, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, Tales of Airport Security. First, from Bo. Bo writes, last Sunday I was flying from Cleveland to Chicago. On my way home to Japan, I'm a nuclear historian working on issues of the social and cultural impact of radiation exposures around the world, primarily from nuclear testing, and I'm very informed on issues related to radiation exposures from the X-ray machines in airports. Uh-oh. I have never gone through one. And always insist on a pat-down instead. You go, Bo. At the airport in Cleveland, there were only X-ray machines, and so I prepared to ask for a pat-down. The TSA employee that I spoke with at the front of the security line assured me that the scanners did not use x-rays. She told me they use radio waves. But the units before us were the secure 1,000 units. I told her that it did use x-ray radiation, and this I refused, and thus I refused to be exposed to radiation. She again insisted there was no radiation used in the unit, and that I should go through it. I still refused. She called her supervisor, who also assured me that the unit just used radio waves. I pointed out that the sign adorning it said that all passengers had the right to opt out, and that I was exercising that right. They glowered at me and said, "Well, then you're going to have to get a pat down." I said, "I know. That was what I was requesting." "I would like to say," says Bo, "that I was shocked that TSA employees and supervisors had no idea what the tools they were using did, but I was not shocked at all." Bo, from Hiroshima. We'll show him. And a suspected radiation leak from a security checkpoint at a Hawaii airport not only ignited legitimate fears about those scanners, it also revealed more ignorance about TSA's photo policies. 11 TSA workers fell ill this week after they were exposed to mysterious fumes emanating from a body scanner. A hazmat team arrived to inspect for radiation. The TSA workers were treated by paramedics, then urged to go to the hospital for further tests. Meanwhile, an employee of the airport, Lihue Airport, snapped photos of the hazmat team, sending them to the local newspaper. The employee told the newspaper that TSA workers regularly forbid passengers from taking photos of the checkpoints. The workers said TSA staff always tells travelers to put down their cameras. "It makes you wonder what kind of stuff is going on there," he said. A Hawaii State Department of Transportation spokesman told the newspaper passengers are not allowed to photograph the checkpoints. Spokesman said travelers are allowed to take pictures of the airport, but not of TSA equipment and checkpoints, per TSA policy, which happens to be wrong. The TSA has always stated that photography and video recording of checkpoints is legal. TSA does ask passengers not to photograph the monitors. What don't they know? Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now news of AFAC. Boy, the bird is sounding hoarse. I wonder, maybe we should just get a horse and skip the middleman. Don't mind me. Or mind me. News of AFAC, as I say. Don't worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing. Deadline Islamabad. Pakistan has angrily rejected a report that said it had been moving its nuclear weapons in unsafe conditions, saying nobody should underestimate its capability to defend itself. Two U.S. magazines reported this week that Pakistan has begun moving its nuclear weapons in low-security vans on congested roads to hide them from U.S. spy agencies, but making the weapons more vulnerable to theft by Islamic militants or Islamist militants. Well, you pick your poison. The Atlantic and National Journal, in a joint report citing unnamed sources, wrote that the U.S. raid that killed Osama at his Pakistani compound reinforced Islamabad's long-standing fears that the U.S. could try to dismantle that country's nuclear arsenal. In a statement, Pakistan's foreign ministry said the report was pure fiction, baseless, and motivated in part by a deliberate propaganda campaign meant to mislead opinion. They sound like Herman Cain. Pakistan is consistent. I'm having a good day. I just flew in. Don't bother me. Pakistan has consistently rejected concerns over the safety of its nuclear arsenal and alluded to it as a smear campaign. Yeah, it does sound like Kermit. How many nukes do they have?
9.
Guess that proves everything. And now, speaking of nukes, smooth,
clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, too safe to meet.
Your eyes look all puffy.
Thanks. That's Addy the Atom making a preemptive strike.
Got to get it in before.
I know, before the news. This is News of the Atom, our friend. Germany will restart the search for a site to store its most dangerous nuclear waste. That's a good idea. Working, therefore, to achieve a national consensus on the issue. This is from the Environment Minister. Norbert Röttgen said he'd work with the country's 16 state governors on a law enabling the search by next summer. He wouldn't say how long it would take to decide on a site, I bet. Only that there would be no taboos on the location. But plenty of booze. This is a watershed point, he said. We will not pass this on to a foreign country or the next generation. The government, therefore, is backing away from a plan to put the waste in Gorleben.
Didn't he pitch for the Dodgers? Gorleben,
a town in the nation's north along the Elbe River that's been the focus of efforts to situate a facility for decades. Germany is seeking now to shut down its atomic reactors by 2022. It has spent more than $1.3 billion of taxpayers' money since the 1980s to determine whether the Gorleben site is appropriate for nuclear waste. Now, at 1.3, is waste, is non-nuclear waste. But wait, there's more. Dominion Virginia Power and federal nuclear regulatory staff members covered up knowledge of geologic faulting at the North Anna Power Station site in 1973, according to a U.S. Justice Department memo. North Anna is the nuclear facility closed since April because of an earthquake. The company told the former Atomic Energy Commission in June 1973 that faulting of rock at the site is neither known nor suspected, even though the company knew about the existence of faulting at North Anna. Earthquakes, as you know, can be bad. The power station shut down automatically this year without damage to safety systems or an unusual release of radioactive material, according to the company and NRC. The quake didn't involve that ancient fault at the North Anna plant. No U.S. nuclear power station had been tripped offline by an earthquake before. The memo was written by the Department of Justice in 1977 by the attorney Bradford Whitman, his investigation determining that VEBCO, the power company involved, had a consistent policy of not filing any formal document that would have informed the then Atomic Energy Commission's licensing board and the public about the fault. At the same time, virtually the entire Office of Regulation of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was well aware of the fault and determined not to take any immediate action to stop the plant's construction or reopen the licensing hearings, Whitman wrote in the memo. Federal nuclear regulators eventually fined the company for making material false statements in the North Anna plant's licensing. It was a really difficult thing for us to do anything as prosecutors because our client agency was involved, Whitman said. The government wasn't deceived. It was part of it. Imagine that. That's unusual. That's one for the books. A new lawsuit is pending over safety issues at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. No Indians live there. Don't get excited. The case comes from the same whistleblower who's raised serious concerns about the waste treatment factory being built at the former nuclear site in southeast Washington. In his new case, Walt Tamosaitis alleges the U.S. Department of Energy played a role in removing him from the waste treatment plant project after he raised safety concerns. Department of Energy declines comment because they're going to be abolished by Rick Perry, if he remembers to do it. Speaking of Hanford, don't expect that the $115 billion cost estimate to complete environmental cleanup work at Hanford will be adequate to finish the job, according to the Hanford Advisory Board. It's just this year's estimate. It's not going to be less. It could be more. $115 billion to clean up. It's intended to be a reasonable cost estimate of cleanup as we understand it today, says Stacy Charbonneau, deputy manager of the Hanford Office of River Protection, but it is not a conservative total potential cost estimate, she said. Charbonneau. Wonder if she's from down Louisiana way. And First Energy Corporation says an investigation of damage to the outer shell of its Davis-Bessie, Ohio nuclear power plant has unearthed additional hairline cracks. Don't get excited. They can cover up the hairline. We do it in Hollywood all the time. Subsurface cracks on the shield building don't affect the facility's structure, integrity, or safety, said First Energy in a letter to investors. The company said the reactor, shut since October 1st, will resume producing power in late November. They're kind of decorative cracks, don't you think? The plant was shut to install a new reactor vessel head 3 years earlier than previously planned. Contractors found the newest cracks on the shield building, a 30-inch thick reinforced concrete structure that protects the reactor's containment building from wind and tornadoes. They've previously discovered a hairline crack measuring about 30 feet. That's a long hairline. After it cut a hole in the side of the building, did First Energy to allow for installation of the new vessel head. Vessel head, wasn't he in that punk band? The commission said last week it was sending a concrete material expert to the plant to look into the cracks. No cracks.
I knew you were going to say that.
Thank you, Andy. He reads me like a cheap paperback book. Clean, cheap, safe, too clean to be cheap and safe to meter. Too anything to meter. Our friend the Atom, ladies and gentlemen. And news of the godly. This just goes on and on and on and on and on. This makes Penn State, I know the joke would be look like the state pen, but that's already happened. Anyway, the British High Court has ruled that the Catholic Church can be held liable for the wrongdoings of its priests. This is a landmark decision. The case is described as an issue of wide general importance in respect of claims against the church. This decision will affect other types of claims in addition to damages actions over alleged sex abuse by priests, which was the situation in this particular case. The trustees of the Portsmouth Roman Catholic Diocesan Trust had a lord for their attorney who said the Catholic Church takes sexual abuse extremely seriously and is entirely concerned to eradicate it. The preliminary issue, he says, was on a point of law. And he emphasized the church was not seeking to abandon responsibility for sexual abuse. During the hearing, the judge was told by the lawyer for the woman at the center of the sex abuse claim that the issue to be determined was whether the church can, quote, ever be vicariously liable in any situation for any tort at all. This is the first time the court had ruled on whether the relationship between a Catholic priest and his bishop is akin to an employment relationship. Who signs his check? And Dateline Milwaukee, because he violated communio episcoporum and other canons by speaking in support of extending the statute of limitations for cases of sexual abuse by priests, retired Detroit Auxiliary Bishop Thomas Gumbleton says he was forced to discontinue his role as pastor at a Detroit parish. It's the first time Gumbleton has revealed details about his removal in 2007. Besides receiving the official notification he had to resign as pastor, Gumbleton said none of his fellow bishops contacted him personally when he spoke in support of the bill and revealed at the bill's hearing that he himself was a survivor of sexual abuse by a priest. News of the Godly, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know, this week, certain folks jumped up and down with a certain long-delayed glee in their hearts as federal grand jury transcripts were unsealed. This was done by Judge Royce Lamberth in Washington, and the grand jury transcripts in question were those involving the questioning of then-former President Richard Nixon, the only time he ever testified under oath on any matters connected with the thing. Grand jury transcripts are usually secret, but Judge Lamberth ruled that the public interest in this particular case overruled the interest of grand jury secrecy. I've read some of them. There's a lot of it. It's voluminous in its own way. It's 13 hours of stuff. And Nixon's Nixon, you know? He gets salty at times. He's being the first 3 or 4 hours of the questioning has to do with trying to see whether he was aware or whether he made any commitments to give ambassadorships to rich campaign contributors of his. And he's very discursive in his testimony. Just wanders off on amazing tangents. So trying to explain the various reasons why people get appointed to ambassadorships, not only in his administration, but in previous administrations. He pointed out Pearl Mesta, who I think under the Kennedy administration had been named ambassador to Luxembourg, and she was at the time a famous Washington socialite, famous as the hostess with the mostest. And now I realize where the nickname came from, because Nixon says in his grand jury testimony, you know, you don't think she got appointed to ambassador of Luxembourg because she had big bosoms, do you? Implying that, you know, she gave money to the Kennedy campaign. Anyway, big controversy about that, and reaction on tape from heaven moments from now here on the show.
There's a cool wind blowing in the sound of happy people at a party given for the gay and debonair. There's an organ blowing in the breeze for the dancers hid behind. Never gonna see what's shaking on the hill. That I someday may be joining in is just wishful thinking. 'Cause admission's only guaranteed to favored few. There's a waiting list and plenty more in a long line leading to the door. So I'll never know for sure what's shaking on the hill. I'm too blue to be played with, and I get heartaches. So they tell me no dice, it isn't allowed in that carefree crowd to be seen with tears in your eyes. So I make out I don't wanna know, but I'm the pretender, kicking cans round while that happy sound cracking on. Though I long so strong to be inside with the blues is where I do reside. So I'll forever be denied what's shaking on the hill. where the blues is where I do reside. So I'll forever be denied what's shaking on the hill. What's shaking on the hill? What's shaking on the hill? What's shaking on the hill?
Sorry I'm late. Angel practice ran long today.
You really haven't figured it out, have you, Alden?
I think I figured out most of it, yes, sir. If you...
You're never going to make Angel. That's just their way of keeping their eye on you. Every minute you're in there practicing on that goody-goody crap, it's time you're not here with me. They know that.
But I haven't made any commitment about going, Angel. I just...
No, I know. It's a great honor and all.
Just trying to stay on the good side of the good guys is all.
No, I know. Nothing wrong with playing the heaven game for all it's worth.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Could come in handy for us, let's say, if our clan runs into Hoover's.
Yeah. It'd be worth it to see the look on his face when he sees you with the wings and all.
Exactly.
Probably think you went over to his team. You know, the Southpaws.
Yeah.
The Nancy Boys.
Right.
Right. So, look, hold on. You saw the grand jury transcript.
No, I know.
Spilled all over the media.
Well, the good thing is, no one cares.
No, that's true. But the haters, you see, they'll never stop caring. That's what sets them apart. Normal people would say it's 30, 40 years ago. Time to give it a break.
Sure.
But you see, these people are like the dog who won't let the bone go after he's destroyed it with slanted prosecutors and the media and so forth.
No, my point was just that damage-wise,
this is,
if not absolutely contained, it's modified, limited contained. Yes, the haters will be going through the testimony with the flea comb, but
there's nothing there.
No.
So I said Pearl Mesta wasn't named ambassador to Luxembourg because she had big bosom. That's not, I mean, that...
No, this whole political correctness thing has come along since we... Departed might take that the wrong way.
Yeah, no. But see, as Henry once said, it had the added advantage of being true.
No, I know.
But, all right, but the question is, what do we do about it?
Again, we're not in the most advantageous situation action-wise.
No, I know. But grand jury secrecy is an inviolable part of our system of law. You've done that.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, all hell breaks loose. Mm-hmm. Who's the damn judge that released all this shinola?
Lamberth, ragging the pointy.
Figures.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, for all his supposed Midwestern roots and so forth, Reagan just ate to be acknowledged by the Ivy League crowd.
Mm-hmm. I just think there was a big push by the transparency lobby, and he just...
No, I know. Just not worth the fight.
Just didn't see the compelling importance of grand jury secrecy as a bedrock component of the rule of law.
I mean, if you can't trust a damn government not to spill grand jury testimony out all over the papers and such...
No, I know.
Anyway, what's the plan with this judge?
In terms of what? I missed the conference call this morning.
No, I know you were in wing fittings. Don't think I don't have information sources over there in the Angel operation.
I was doing whatever I had to do.
But we're just not going to let this judge get away with violating the most sacred part of Anglo-American jurisprudence. I mean, judges file tax returns, right?
Well, yes, but...
Well, let's get the IRS to make those public. Yeah. Just say, you know, in the interest of transparency and so forth, here they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't have to investigate. Now, put those out there and let the media jackals go to work.
Yeah, a couple of problems I see with that. Well, one, we... don't really have access to IRS records anymore. Mm. Two, not really sure the media could be convinced this has what they call legs.
All right. But if just being thoroughly hypothetical about this, because after all, that is our right here to discuss all matters freely and without fear of retribution from on high, because damn it, we are on high.
Right.
Just hypothesizing. Mm-hmm. A break-in at the IRS could generate those tax records for the judge.
Yes, it could. Question, I guess, 1A, we don't really have operatives.
We still have the Cubans.
The Cubans.
Right.
As you know, we didn't really believe it was useful or helpful to get them admitted up here and communications to the other place.
I know. There's this whole holier-than-thou attitude up here about hell.
That's right. Very tough communications.
Well, damn it, Haldeman, we're not going to let every two-bit federal judge run roughshod over the bedrock of the rule of law.
No.
We're just not.
No, of course not. Sends the wrong message.
That's right. That's what it does.
Yeah.
Can we get it to rain over the judge's house? You mean like a normal rainstorm? Hell, there's global warming. More freak weather type events. Mm. Just a rainstorm that sits over his house for months. Extreme, unrelenting. That's it. That's it. Just unrelenting. You know, some of the people at practice might...
All right.
You use your angel connections and get back to me on this.
Mm.
I'll see them again on Thursday.
Right, because I'm not going to forget about this and get all squishy like I did when they let the archives take over the library.
No, I know. Hang tough time.
That's right.
Mm. That's right.
Mm.
We'll get this, Judge.
No,
we absolutely will.
Mm.
Might take some time.
You know, maybe something simpler. Maybe just bugging his chamber.
You know, there. Again, we run into the personnel issue.
All right, well, damn it, let's just do something.
Absolutely.
All right.
This is Le Show, and now... News of the Olympic Movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol, Jr. The ads show a River Thames that looks uncluttered. Londoners knew right away there was something missing. Organizers of the 2012 London Games have apologized now for airbrushing the HMS Belfast, an historic warship that now serves as a tourist attraction, out of posters meant to promote a cultural festival. Designers limited the warship, based near Tower Bridge, from an aerial photograph of the river because it interfered with words in the advertisement meant to promote the festival. Britain's tabloid press noted the omission, and veterans groups, expressed outrage. Organizers say the ads without the Belfast will be removed. Major West End musicals are debating the possibility of closing for the duration of the London Olympics. According to the financial website, This Is Money. Andrew Lloyd Webber's production company is reportedly considering closing West End shows, including Phantom of the Opera and The Wizard of Oz. A spokesperson for the company said decisions about closures will be left to individual producers. The European Tour Operators Association has announced that its members are facing a 95% decrease in London bookings for the Olympic period, while the managing director of Encore Tickets says the company is bracing itself for sales from tourists to be at least 40% down from last year. The executive director of the Tour Operators Association say, "We always see a decline in demand for a destination during an Olympic year. During the Olympic period itself, there is almost no demand from regular tourists." Heard that before? Martin Creed's plans to get bells to toll across Britain to mark the first day of the London Olympics has received a less-than-ringing endorsement from a leading church group. The Turner Prize-winning artist wants people across the UK to ring bells, church bells to bicycle bells, at 8 a.m. on July 27th, the day of the opening ceremony. He wants bells to be rung as quickly and loudly as possible, claiming that since Roman times, they've been used to announce special celebrations. However, the Central Council of Church Bell Ringers has dismissed the project as nonsense. "It was a nice idea, but it has not been thought through properly," says spokesman Alan Chandler. "It could be seen as antisocial to ring church bells at 8 a.m. on a day not normally associated with ringing. The first plan was to do something at an even more outlandish hour of 4 a.m., when the torch arrived in England. In addition, ringing the bells as quickly as possible might damage the reputation of ringing," he says. "Bells should be rung properly and steadily to produce a nice sound," says Creed, the artist. "I think it's something worth trying to do. If someone doesn't like it, I don't know what to say. Except it could be something that sounds nice. It's a very small idea, and whenever I heard bells ringing, I always thought it was a brilliant sound. I thought it'd be good to make a piece of music that just consisted of a lot of bells ringing. I don't know which bells are the best ones, so I think it would be better to ring all of them at once." The Olympics. It's a movement, and we all need one. Every day.
And a piece of music is supposed to start now. But it's not. That's so sad. There's a nice piece of music going to start. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we'll move right along in the production, the smooth production of today's broadcast. The story that started the week and sort of in the wave of campaign and other news got buried by it. But I'm not ashamed. I'm not proud, but I'm not ashamed to say that I did pay attention to the trial of Michael Jackson's doctor, Dr. Conrad Murray, who was found guilty this week of involuntary manslaughter in the death of Michael Jackson, and could get sentenced to as much as 4 years, I think, is the maximum. The allegation which the jury bought was that Dr. Murray had given Michael Jackson a fatal dose of an anesthetic called propofol, usually used only in operating rooms, and this was in Jackson's bedroom. Apparently, Dr. Murray had been giving Jackson propofol for a couple of months, in addition to some other benzodiazepines. Pains. They're hypnotics. I think they're used for various purposes, but usually not as sleep aids. Jackson had apparently a persistent sleeping problem, dated according to trial testimony, all the way back to 1993. Gee, I wonder what happened then. Anyway, as I say, Dr. Murray was convicted of administering a fatal dose of propofol and leaving the room for a couple of minutes to make phone calls, call his girlfriend, among other things. When he came back, he found Jackson not breathing. And there was a tape played during the trial. I don't have it with me this week. one of these days I'll bring it in. It was a tape that Murray made of Michael Jackson, which just sounded remarkable. Sounded like he was on a lot of benzodiazepines and maybe even a little propofol. But that's really not the way I think we want to remember Michael Jackson. I think there are other ways we want to remember him.
We're just so blessed. The jury passed its test. I can sleep and I can rest. Propofol in heaven. I called it milk. Now it's cream. All night till I dream. And I hear the children scream. Propofol in heaven. Bring on the midazolam. Load up another razor pen. Don't need no marzipan. And here you never regret them. Cause you don't need a doctor to get them. Saw it all on the news. Then I took a long snooze. Be a fool not to choose propofol in heaven. Always thought there would be a day when I'd be free. Now it's the life for me, propofol in heaven. Bring on the midazolam. Load up on the razor pen. Don't need no marzipan. And here you never regret them. Cause you don't need a doctor to get them. Heal the world, I would say. Heal the sky, heal the bay. Now I'm healed every day. Propofol in heaven.
heaven. In heaven.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The producers of the film version of Atlas Shrugged Part 1 have apologized for an embarrassing error on the DVD cover that described the theme of their adaptation of Ayn Rand's novel as one of, quote, self-sacrifice, unquote. As disciples of Rand, one of libertarianism's heroes, are supposed to know Atlas Shrugged is actually all about, quote, rational self-interest. On Friday, the producers announced plans to replace more than 100,000 title sheets on the DVD and Blu-ray versions of the movie, because they were packaged with an inaccurate synopsis of Atlas Shrugged. It's embarrassing for sure, and of course, regardless of how or why it happened, we're all feeling responsible right now, says Scott DiSapio, Atlas Productions Communications Director. You can imagine how mortified we all were when we saw the DVD, but it was simply too late. It was certainly no surprise when the incredulous emails ensued. He adds, the irony is inescapable. What about the medals? Making his first public appearance since the nuclear accident, the facility's general manager, Masao Yoshida, has apologized for failing to prevent the triple meltdowns, but emphasized that conditions at the plant have, quote, definitely been stabilized, unquote. The first thing I would like to do is apologize to the people of Fukushima and in the whole of Japan, he said, for causing them great trouble. In an effort to salve the long, festering wounds and to counter Iran's influence ahead of the military drawdown, the United States ambassador to Iraq, James Jeffrey, has offered Iraq's Shiite leaders something they've heard very little of over the years since the U.S. invaded, remorse. In a move that analysts say is highly unusual for a top-level diplomat, Jeffrey has apologized to Iraqi politicians and tribal leaders in the Shiite-dominated South for the United States' inaction during the 1991 Shiite uprising. Galling for the Iraqis was that President George H.W. Bush publicly encouraged that revolt and then allowed American forces to stand by while it was suppressed by Saddam Hussein's helicopter gunships and execution squads in a bloodbath that claimed tens of thousands of lives. Syria apologized to Lebanon this week for repeated border violations and has vowed to respect its neighbors' independence and sovereignty. That was an announcement from Lebanese President Michel Sleiman's office. Bet he believes that. A Catholic school in London apologized Wednesday for abuse of pupils by monks over 40 years. This week's Catholic apology accepted recommendations to fundamentally change the way it's run to protect children in the future. Chris Clue, the headmaster of St. Benedict's School, expressed his heartfelt apologies following an independent British report detailing 21 incidents of abuse by monks dating from the 1970s until last year. Past abuses at the school have left a terrible legacy for those affected and have tarnished the reputation of St. Benedict's. On behalf of all at the school, I offer my heartfelt apology for past failures. The school could have and should have done more. The independent report into the abuse recommends that the governance of the school be removed from the hands of the Benedictine monks. It's not the only thing that should be removed. No, please stop with that, would you? Celebrity chef and restaurant owner Mario Batali has apologized for comparing bankers to Hitler and Stalin, while finance executives reacted with angry comments and calls for a boycott. To remove any ambiguity about my appearance at the Person of the Year panel, I want to apologize for my remarks, Batali said through his spokeswoman. It was never my intention to equate our banking industry with Hitler and Stalin, two of the most evil, brutal dictators in modern history. His original comment at a panel sponsored by Time magazine was, quote, so the ways the bankers have kind of toppled the way money is distributed and taken most of it into their hands is as good as Stalin or Hitler or the evil guys, Batali said. They're not heroes, but they are people that had a really huge effect on the way the world is operating. A lot of sharply worded denunciations followed. Many called for a boycott of Batali's apparently 20 establishments, which include, and this is Bloomberg writing, the news service, not the mayor, Manhattan Power Restaurants. Any other city have, well, yeah, Washington, I guess. Power restaurants. Go eat some power. Hey, the good news is, well, says an Arkansas businessman, Blant Hurt. Come on. Everybody in Hollywood making up names of Southerners, admit failure. You didn't come up with Blant Hurt. He's a Arkansas businessman who frequently dined at Batali's restaurants in New York and Las Vegas. I love his restaurants, but I'm done with him. I will never eat in another one of his places, he wrote in an email. He's insulted a considerable number of his customers at the very time Wall Street is shrinking organically. Very, very dumb move on his part, says Blanthurt. I say, now you can get a reservation. News International Executive Chairman James Murdoch has formally apologized for the Sun's reporting of the 1989 Hillsborough disaster that tragically took the lives of 96 Liverpool fans. At a parliamentary hearing this week, the Member of Parliament for Liverpool alluded to the disaster as an example of News International's wrongful coverage in the past. Said Murdoch, I'd like to add my full apology to the wrong coverage of that affair. I'd like to add that voice to successive editors of The Sun, chief executives of News International who said who since that instance have apologized. It was 22 years ago and I was far away and a much younger person, but I've since looked at it. I'm aware of the concerns and the hurt that it caused, and it's something that we're very sorry for, and I am as well. The former legal advisor for News International has apologized to the parliamentary committee investigating the phone hacking scandal. He says he hasn't been able to see his record since he left the company in July. He says, I accept that my recollection was incorrect in relation to certain details. I apologize for that, says Tom Crone.
Tom Crone!
More News Corp. Nice Corp, excuse me. Apologies. James Murdoch has admitted members of the Parliamentary Culture, Sport, and Media Committee that's investigating phone hacking were put under covert surveillance by News International. No wonder we call it Nice Corp. They were surveilling the Parliamentary Committee that was investigating them. Speaking towards the end of the 2.5-hour appearance before the committee this week, he said, I am aware of the case of surveilling Mr. Watson, Tom Watson, one of the members of the committee, and again, under the circumstances, I apologize unreservedly. He insisted he had not known the surveillance had taken place until the past few weeks. I want to say for the record, it is appalling. It is shocking. It is something I would never condone, and it is something the company should never condone, because it's nice. He didn't say that last part. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. James Murdoch was mistaken when he told Parliament members that he did not believe News International had to date admitted liability for any kind of computer or email hacking, according to The Guardian. Evidence exists to prove that not only has News of the World previously been forced to admit liability for hacking computers and illegally accessing emails, but it continued to engage in that behavior long after promising that all illegal activity on the newspaper had ceased. News of Nice Corp. Nice people. Doing nice things.
Oh, my father's voice was a very special thing. And when I went to sleep, I knew I'd wake to hear him sing. And every morning when he'd warm up, there was hope that it would bring. In the joy in his face when he reached that hallowed place, and I made my choice, I chose my father's voice. My father was a very special thing. And in our house of mirrors, there was safety it would bring. And in the clouds above my bedroom, they would part and show me a spring. And my pride reached its fill, and my sadness lost its will, and I had no choice but to choose my father's voice. still a very special thing. Yet he doesn't seem to understand the pleasure that it brings. To all my friends who love him when he sings old Christmas hymns. And I'm proud and I'm pleased that through him they must see me. I'm the acorn, he's the oak, heart-strung girl, heartfelt bloke. Oh, I have no choice, I am my father's boy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast from KCRW.com. And it'd be just like more apologies from James Murdoch. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Mr. Shearer's assistant is Pam Halstead. Thanks to her. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the almost 50,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. And congratulations to Silvio Berlusconi, resigned today as the Prime Minister of Italy, and now he'll get to add a third bunga to his parties. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.